just
borrow your pen 1 sec there, would you please? All right.
Is that a review?
Yeah. Great review. Did you read the Time review?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's really, in fact, it's the reviews, except for the New York Times, are really fabulous.
Right. Yeah, it's great. Let me photocopy this.
Absolutely. Okay. And I might refer to it some.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's talk about the loyalties and yourself. Apparently, you got the idea for this book not recently, but quite a while ago.
Well, very much like I had been in the middle of this great national event in Watergate, and Woodward and myself set out to write a book about our vantage point in the middle of this national trauma. As a child, I had been in the midst of another great national trauma, which was McCarthyism. My parents had been hauled before congressional committees and took the Fifth Amendment. My family had been under surveillance for 30-something years. The FBI had come to my bar mitzvah. And I knew that, like in Watergate and All the President's Men, that by telling the small story, that I would be able, as we did in All the President's Men, to give the larger history, to make it accessible. And that's what I've done in Loyalties, I think. And that seems to be what the reviewers have concluded.
Yeah. But you started the book in the late 1970s, didn't you?
I began the book in 1978, and I did all the research, and I wrote what's the first 50 pages, actually, in 1978. And then I became blocked, or so I thought. And I didn't return to the book until 1984. It's clear to me now I was too young to do the book the first time out. I was not a father yet. This is very much a book about fathers and sons. You know, there are a lot of classic American books that are about fathers and sons. And until I was a father, I couldn't really look at the relationship between my father and myself. And a lot of this book is about that relationship and about my father's insistence that I not write this book. My parents didn't want me to write this book because they feared that it would bring up in their lives again the terrible things that they went through during the witch hunts. And yet I see this book as their last great act, that through this book, people in this country, perhaps through this small personal story, can perhaps finally understand and come to grips with that last undisturbed corner of the national nightmare, which is the McCarthy era.
And yet your parents ultimately did approve and cooperate, didn't they?
Very reluctantly. My father, I would not say that he really approves. In fact, in the postscript to the book, he says he wishes that I hadn't done this, that he fears that all the great things that he did in his life, defending people before the witch hunters, committing himself to the struggles of desegregation in another era, that his motives are somehow going to be undermined. That he speaks in the book that he's concerned that everything he did is going to be demeaned because, of course, there's a great secret in this book, and that is that my parents were members of the Communist Party for a brief period. It was somewhat incidental to their lives from 1942 to 47, and they have great fear about that secret and the ability of people to handle that information even today. And I understand that fear, and I think indeed there still are people who can't handle that information responsibly in this country.
What was it like as you began to do the research about your family, because you go back to your grandparents, in fact?
Well, it's not the research. I was, let me go back on that one again.
Sure.
Let me just think for a second.
Well, let me.
What I do in this book is that I take all the investigative skills. Time magazine has called this book and hailed it as a new genre. They say it's an investigative memoir. And in fact, I rather like the description, because what I've done is I've gone back and taken all the skills that I've acquired as a reporter over 25, 27 years. And I've now turned those skills not on Richard Nixon, but on Carl Bernstein and on his parents and on my family. And not on the presidency of Nixon, but rather on the presidency of Truman. And in this book, I've had two truly astonishing interviews as a journalist in my life. One was with Hugh Sloan, the Nixon reelection committee's treasurer, who sat there and told Woodward how John Mitchell, while Attorney General of the United States, had controlled a secret fund that paid for the bugging at Watergate and other undercover activities against President Nixon's political opponents. The other astonishing interview is in this book, as Clark Clifford, the eminence of Democratic Party politics for two generations, sits there and tells me, Carl, there was never a real loyalty problem in this country. We made it up. We manufactured it so that Harry Truman could be reelected. J. Edgar Hoover, Clifford told me, was putting pressure on us. He was giving information to Truman about his adversaries. Truman had a rough presidential race in 48, so he initiated this terrible piece of business, this loyalty order, in which tens of thousands of people were hauled before tribunals called loyalty boards. This was in America, not in the Soviet Union. In the time of Stalin and in the time of Truman, these people were hauled before loyalty boards, not in the Kremlin, but on the Mall in Washington. And without confronting the ability to confront their accusers, to see what information it was that had been gathered against them, they were essentially called treasonous and had to prove their innocence without any constitutional protections. And in this book, my father handled more than 500 of these cases. And happily, he saved the transcripts and his notes. And we kept them under the steps in our house in Washington so the FBI would never take them away while we were under surveillance. And they're still classified, these transcripts. And in those transcripts is really the hidden history of our, of the post-war era, just as the hidden history of the Nixon years was in Watergate.
As you were growing up and your parents under surveillance, were you aware of what was going on?
Well, I was aware, one, that when I was 10 years old, my mother had been before the House Committee on Un-American Activities and took the Fifth Amendment. And the next day when I got to school, some kid on the playground said, Bernstein, your mother's a communist, and I got into the worst fight I ever got into as a child. I was aware that there were terrible troubles that where my parents were involved in. I was aware that every night a procession of people would come through our living room and dining room, and my father would sit there and take notes, and that he was trying to defend them in some way, and that these people were trembling, and some of these people were crying, and some of these people had little children who were getting thrown out of their nursery schools. My sister got thrown out of her nursery school because my mother had been before the Un-American Committee. And then when I was 12, 13, there was a man who said to a group of us playing touch football in the street that he was helping the FBI to send all us communist Jews back to Russia, where we belonged. And I had a pretty good idea that we were under some kind of surveillance, yes.
You used the Freedom of Information Act to get information about your parents. It was astonishing, the amount of material. There were thousands of pages, weren't there?
My parents were kept under observation, physical surveillance, electronic surveillance, telephone taps, followed for more than 30 years. Interestingly enough, they stopped in 1972, the year of Watergate, before Watergate. And the FBI amassed 2,500 pages of files on my parents. All of them fascinating, because what they show is that my parents really did three things in their political lives. They fought for desegregation, they opposed fascism, and they fought for the rights of union members and for the right to organize. And what you see in these files, and you see my father defending these people before the Truman Loyalty Review Boards, and at one point the FBI notes that Bernstein has been so successful in defending these accused people accused of disloyalty, he's won up to 80% of his cases, and you see how disturbed the FBI was by this. You see personal notations from J. Edgar Hoover saying to keep my family under surveillance and see what they can come up with. And, of course, all they come up with are poker games. My first date, I'm observed going in the car on my first date. They followed me to the Sunday school that I went to. They showed up at my bar mitzvah and took down license numbers. It's an incredible tale. And, of course, it had its bearing on my coverage of Watergate in that, not that I thought Richard Nixon was necessarily responsible for what had happened at Watergate, but I did come to Watergate with a knowledge and an assumption that the government of this country has at times engaged in terrible acts against those who don't agree with the policies of the President of the United States. And that was a very helpful thing to have in the back of my mind.
Well, there certainly was a high degree of paranoia in the 1940s and the 1950s, and after reading Loyalties, I can't, even though your parents were admitted communists, I can't see one area in which they threatened the security of the United States.
Well, I think this is the great mythology about the Communist Party in the United States. I say in the book that that the true romance of American communism might be the widely held belief that the Communist Party was fundamentally an organization to which people were falsely accused of belonging. That is to say that we have a notion that all these people who came before the Un-American Committee were and took the Fifth Amendment were not members of the Communist Party, that they were falsely accused. Usually the FBI knew who was a member of the party and who wasn't a member of the party. The important thing to remember is that the Communist Party, particularly in the 40s, was one of very few vehicles that was political vehicles that was available to radicals and those on the left and liberals to express their political views if they involved desegregation, particularly in Washington or in the South. You know, Washington was a Jim Crow town. My father's union, I write in this book about my being 8 and 9 years old and being on picket lines sitting in Washington to desegregate the swimming pools and to desegregate the lunch counters. It was a Jim Crow town that I grew up in. If you believed in desegregation, if you wanted to fight fascism before the United States entered World War II, if you wanted to organize workers in this country, the Communist Party was a rather logical place to put your beliefs, and especially if you believed in some degree of socialism. The notion that the Communist Party was essentially a group of people hell-bent on some kind of violent overthrow of the United States government, as my father says, he never knew anybody that advocated the violent overthrow of the government. I must say I've never known anybody as a child or as an adult who came from this milieu that advocated any such thing.
Well, both of your parents, when they appeared before the committee, took the Fifth, and in that climate, taking the Fifth was almost the same thing as an admission of being a member, wasn't it?
That's correct, and you really had no other choice. I mean, that as it was, taking the Fifth Amendment resulted in people being blacklisted. Can you imagine what the acknowledgement or admission of actually being a member of the party would have been, what the repercussions would have been? As it was, my father, who took the Fifth Amendment. And interestingly enough, the FBI and all those 2,500 pages was never able to establish that my father was a member of the Communist Party, which is one of the reasons my father feels strongly that I should not have revealed that in this book, that he thinks it was a private act. And at the same time, I knew there was no way that I could write an honest book about my family, about myself, or about this period in our national life if I didn't report the truth the same way that I did in Watergate. He took the Fifth Amendment, and after my father had appeared before those congressional committees, he had to open a neighborhood laundry, 26 laundry machines filled with dirty socks and underwear in a poor black neighborhood in Washington. My father couldn't work for another 7 years. By the age of 40, my father was excluded from participating in the events of his day, which, you know, he was one of those bright young men who came to Washington in the New Deal, who had held a major position in the New Deal. By the time he was the age that I wrote this book, he was working in a neighborhood laundry.
You shed a lot of information about your own life and growing up in your book. I guess you had somewhat of a wild streak. Tell me about this.
Well, I think I rebelled against both my parents' politics tried to, as my parents were being persecuted, I think I felt like an outsider, that I was aware of somehow being different as a child than other kids in my neighborhood, because my parents were of this political I want to go over that one again. You want to ask me that one again?
Yeah, it seems to me, in reading Loyalties, you had somewhat of a wild streak yourself. You had some adjustment difficulties. There were a number of arrests and things like that. Tell me about how this happened.
Well, I think that as a child, because of what was happening to my parents, there was a lot of dislocation and a lot of anger that I had. And, you know, I wanted to be like every other kid. Every other kids, all the other kids, they didn't have these political troubles. So what did I do? I became this kind of patriotic nut. I was the air raid warden in grammar school, and we had air raid drills in those days, you know, about every 2-3 days, because we thought the MiGs were coming across the Potomac any day now. I sold school savings stamps that paid for these kind of Cold War bonds that you would get for $18.75. I wore an Ike and Dick button to school in the 1952 campaign. I rebelled against the politics of my parents. I saw the pain and trouble it had caused them, so I sort of went the other way. And I guess one of the reasons I became a journalist was to avoid what I regarded as the troubles that came from real political commitment. You know, it's pretty easy to be a journalist. It doesn't require any commitment. What, of course, I found out was that actually that the values that I got from my parents, I was called upon actually to have a real commitment during our reporting on Watergate. Not a political commitment, but a real commitment to the truth. And that also is a legacy I get from my parents, because they're not ideologues. Though they're of the left, my father is the most reasoned and rational of men. But yes, I rebelled, I wanted quiet. I didn't want all this turbulence that was going on in my life. So I then created a little turbulence, raised a little hell on my own, broke a few windows, got arrested for it when I was about 15 or 16, that kind of stuff.
You said that you started the book some time ago and ran into a block. What were the factors that unblocked you?
One, being older. When I started working on the book, I was in my early 30s, and I wasn't a father yet. Then when I went back to the book, I was past 40. I was a father, and I understood some feelings about my own sons that I think connected me to feelings about my father. I also knew that, like in Watergate, where I had been in the middle of the most extraordinary moment of American history in my adult life, and having had a role in it, as a child, I also had been in the midst of the most extraordinary moment in our national role in it, and had a role in it, and my parents had a role in it, and like in Watergate, I had the secret files sitting in the basement. These files my father had kept. And when it finally got time to really write this story, and I went, for instance, to the head of the Truman Library, who was a keeper of the president's papers, and told him that I was, among other things, writing about Harry Truman's role in making McCarthyism inevitable by this terrible loyalty order that he initiated, the keeper of the president's papers said to me, "I wondered when somebody was going to get around to that."
Do you miss those days on the Washington Post?
No. I love writing books. During the Iran-Contra story, I did a little reporting, and I turned over what I learned to Woodward. I don't miss daily journalism. You know, I went to work in daily journalism when I was 16. I wrote thousands of daily stories. I was on the air with ABC for 4 years. But I love now seeing my work as a kind of continuum, you know, there's All the President's Men, and there's The Final Days, and out of those two books flows Loyalties, this memoir of my childhood and my parents. And now I'm about to start a book on the American press, which seems to me is the great unreported story in America, is how we journalists do or don't do our own jobs. And again, I suspect that I'm going to approach this from my vantage point, like I've done in All the President's Men, like I've done in Loyalties, and use my own small experience to look at a much larger subject of great national importance.
Well, to kind of wrap things up because we're running late. Oh, by the way, I should ask you, who was Deep Throat?
Deep Throat was the source that we identify in among all the president's men as someone occupying a sensitive position in the executive branch of government, and that's as far as we've ever gone. Interestingly enough, Bob Woodward just said recently that when Deep Throat dies, provisions he'll make provisions that the identity be revealed. I was surprised to see Bob do that. And at the same time, since we're the only two people, and it's the only secret in the whole world, I think, that really exists, that Woodward and I are the only people who know this secret. And Bob has made a decision, and since it was Bob's source, not mine, to reveal it at a certain point, that will happen.
Well, Carl Bernstein, my last question of you, after the completion of this book, your father obviously has read it. Have you made peace with
him? There was never a question of not being having peace. I think through the whole experience we became closer. I think my father, nonetheless, is very concerned about this book. He says that he's worried that it's going to clean up McCarthy because it acknowledges that many people were members of the Communist Party. I don't agree with my father about that. He worries about its impact on his life and that of my mother. They're 73 and 79 years old. It's late in their lives to become objects of public attention once again. It was a terrible experience for them the first time. And yet, I see this book as their last great act, and that through this book and through their witness and their testimony, that people of my generation, as the reviews of this book have said, can finally come to grips and understand with something about our own terrible history in this country that we need to know so that it never happens again.
Carol Bernstein, thank you very much.
Thank you.